Isaiah chapter 33. Woe to you who plunder, though you have not been plundered, and you who deal treacherously, though they have not dealt treacherously with you. When you cease plundering, you will be plundered. When you make an end of dealing treacherously, they will deal treacherously with you. The subject here is Assyria. We could put in, woe to you, Assyria, who plunder, though you haven't been plundered, and Syria, who deals treacherously, though the people you're attacking haven't dealt treacherously with you. When you get done plundering, guess what's going to happen to you, Assyria? You're going to get plundered. Now, when Assyria plundered and dealt treacherously, they were so cruel to their captives that oftentimes when they would surround a city, the people would commit suicide instead of be captured because they knew how terrible Assyria was. They would gouge out eyes. They would pull out tongues. They chained people together by putting rings in their noses and chaining the rings together. Or they would literally put hooks in their jaws and chain them together and make them march back to Assyria. They were brutal. They were known as being brutal. Now we have a verse in the New Testament. It's in Matthew chapter 7. Judge not that you not be judged, for with what judgment you judge, you yourself will be judged. I think this applies. Look at verse 1b. You will be plundered when you make an end of dealing treacherously. They will deal treacherously with you. As Assyria is dealing treacherously, so they're going to be dealt with. Nebuchadnezzar is going to come and conquer Assyria. Verse 2. This is the start of a prayer by Isaiah. O Lord, be gracious to us. We have waited for you. Be our arm every morning, our salvation also in the time of trouble. At the noise of tumult, the people shall flee. When you lift yourself up, the nations shall be scattered, and your plunder shall be gathered. Like the gathering of the caterpillar, as the running to and fro of locust, he shall run upon them. So it's a prayer of deliverance. Lord, stretch out your arm. And when you do, these people are going to be eaten up as a caterpillar eats. Have you ever watched what a group of caterpillars will do to a tree? They just devour the leaves. They eat everything. Or the locusts. They just ruin the crop. So, Lord, when you act, that's what you're going to be like. We know that. We have that confidence in you, Lord. Verse 5, the Lord is exalted, for he dwells on high. He has filled Zion with justice and righteousness. Wisdom and knowledge will be the stability of your times. And the strength of salvation, the fear of the Lord, is his treasure. Now, there's several things in here. First part, the Lord is exalted, for he dwells on high. Well, God is on high. He's exalted. He's God. He's as high as you can get. And then he's just. He's filled Zion with justice and righteousness. He's done that by communicating to his people. And he's told them about righteousness and justice. Wisdom and knowledge, they come from him. But look what the result of wisdom and knowledge is. Stability of your times. When we have knowledge of God and we exercise wisdom, regardless of what comes, we'll be stable. And the strength of salvation, the fear of the Lord is his treasure. God treasures when we fear him. Now, this is a respectful kind of a fear. This isn't cowering in the corner. This is God. Yeah, I honor and respect you. You are holy. That's God's treasure. When he sees our hearts doing that, that's a treasure to him. Verse 7. Surely their valiant ones, or we could say so-called valiant ones, shall cry outside. The ambassadors of peace, those ambassadors that trusted in other nations, shall weep bitterly. The highways lie waste. The traveling man ceases. He has broken the covenant. He has despised the cities. He regards no man. The earth mourns and languishes. Lebanon is shamed and shriveled. Sharon is like a wilderness, and Bashan and Carmel shake off their fruits. Now, Sharon is, here's the Jezreel Valley, and right there where you can see the white clouds, that's where Mount Carmel is. It's a coastal range of mountains. It's not that long. It goes down to about where my pointer is. And so, Sharon, that is from down here where Tel Aviv is, which is also where Joppa is. So from about Joppa up to here where Carmel is, that's a they call it a plain. Sharon means like a plain. It's actually rolling hills. It's a plain, but it's become rolling hills, and it's very, very fertile land. And Bashan is in North Israel, which is up in this region, up above the Sea of Galilee, up from Mount Hermon down in this region. So this is fertile and lots of water. So let's read that again. Sharon, that fruitful land, is like a wilderness. And Bashan and Carmel shake off their fruits. So obviously we're talking about God's judging here. He's judging these people that have been attacking Israel. Even the land is going to be wiped out. We'll pick it up in verse 10. Now I will rise, says the Lord. Ooh, that makes me sit up and take notice. Now I will be exalted. Now I will lift myself up. You shall conceive chaff. You shall bring forth stubble. Is any of that edible or sellable or of any good? So our work is going to bring forth nothing. Your breath as fire shall devour you, and the people shall be like the burnings of lime. Like thorns cut up, they shall be burned in the fire. It's the day of God's judgment. When God judges, he will judge perfectly. He will judge righteously. And here we have the verse, I will rise up, and it's time for judgment. And the world should be saying, oh my, because what they produce is going to be nothing. God's going to just toast it. Hear, you who are afar off, what I have done, and you who are near, acknowledge my might. So when God judges, it's a learning time, a learning experience. It's a learning moment. Those of you that weren't judged but get to look on and see this judgment happening to Assyria, take notice. See what's happened. The sinners in Zion are afraid. Fearfulness has seized the hypocrites. Hello? Yeah, you're in Zion and you're not walking with the Lord? You're not trusting in the Lord and you watch Assyria get judged by God? Should take notice. Who among us shall dwell with the devouring fire? Who among us shall dwell with everlasting burnings? Who of us can resist God's judgment when he does bring it to the earth? None of us. Verse 15, he who walks righteously and speaks uprightly, he who despises the gain of oppressions, who gestures with his hands refusing bribes, who stops his ears from hearing bloodshed and shuts his eyes from seeing evil. Well, who is that in verse 15? That's us. It's God's people. The sinners who've rejected God, he's talking to Israel now, there's some that have rejected God. They don't believe that God's going to deliver them. Some of them are going down to Egypt to try to run away from the Assyrians. And God's saying, don't do that. You're being foolish because Egypt's going to get carried away too. Instead, trust in me. Stay in Jerusalem. I will deliver you. So the sinners, they're looking on. They have an opportunity to learn from the judgment that God is doing over Assyria. And then there's the other group of people, those people that believe in God and are trusting God. We've been made righteous through Jesus. We have Jesus' righteousness covering us when God looks at us. We don't feel righteous, but God has made us righteous. And so he's saying here, he who walks righteously and speaks uprightly, he who despises the gain of oppressions, we're God's people. We're supposed to despise oppressions. We're supposed to refuse bribes. We don't want to be shedders of blood. We want to shut our eyes from seeing evil. We're God's people. We need to walk like God. Verse 16, that type of person, he will dwell on high. His place of defense will be the fortress of rocks. Bread will be given him. His water will be sure. And then we have the fruit of dwelling with God on high. Your eyes will see the king in his beauty. They will see the land that is very far off. Your heart will meditate on terror. Now, this seems a little confusing at first, but what he's talking about is Assyria was your terror. And you're going to be sitting there after you've been delivered, and you're going to be thinking about that terror that you were so afraid of. And he says, where is the scribe? The one who says, you're in my army, Assyria. The Assyrian scribe who's gathering together the soldiers or who's keeping track of the spoil that they gather. Where is he who weighs? Hey, he's weighing the spoil that they got. Or we cut off this many heads. Here we go. Or we have this many prisoners. See, there they are with the hooks in their jaws. Where is that guy? Where is he who counts the towers? When you'd attack a town, you'd look, how many towers do they have? Because that's like a tank or something. They can throw things down from it or shoot arrows from it. Where are these guys, these military people? You will not see, in verse 19, a fierce people, a people of obscure speech beyond perception, of a stammering tongue that you cannot understand. You're not going to see any Assyrians anymore. God's going to judge them. You who loved me, believed in me, I'm going to deliver you, and you're not going to see this attacking army. Now we're going to move to the far. Remember, as we go through Isaiah, we have the near and the far. Look upon Zion, the city of our appointed feasts. Your eyes will see Jerusalem, a quiet home, a tabernacle that will not be taken down. It's permanent. The tabernacle is going to be there permanently. And the tabernacle represents a meeting place with God. Not one of its stakes will ever be removed, nor will any of its cords be broken. But there the majestic Lord will be for us, a place of broad rivers and streams, in which no galley with oars will sail, nor majestic ships pass by. So there's broad rivers and streams there, but there are no attacking ships. It's peaceful. For the Lord is our judge. I'm in verse 22. For the Lord is our judge, the Lord is our lawgiver, the Lord is our king, he will save us. Your tackle is loosed. They could not strengthen their mast, they could not spread the sail. It's not a lot of sections in the Bible that talk about sailing, and as a sailor I find this kind of cool. So they don't have the ropes that'll hold the mast up. They can't even get their sail up. Then the prey of great plunder is divided. The lame take the prey. And the inhabitant will not say, I am sick. The people who dwell in it will be forgiven their iniquity. In 23b, we're back to the near. Because remember, the angel came and killed 185,000. And then they went out and they took the spoil. And even the lame can go out there because all the soldiers are laying around dead. They can go out there and pick stuff up. Verse 34. Come near, you nations, to hear. And heed, you people. Let the earth hear. And all that is in it, the world and all things that come forth from it. This is a call for all to hear and also a call for all to heed. And you're going to see that we're going to be talking about the tribulation period. Now, before we go into 34 and 35, let's review what we see coming and the history that we've had. Judah is still in Jerusalem. The northern 10 tribes have been hauled away. And we know that Judah is going to be delivered from the Assyrians, but who comes and gets Judah and carries them away? Babylon with King Nebuchadnezzar. And for 70 years, the land just lies barren. The temple's totally destroyed, and it's just a wilderness there. Then they come back and they rebuild the temple, and we have them from a little more than 500 BC in their homeland until Jesus comes. In 70 AD, the Romans destroy Judea, and they send all the Jews out of the region. You're gone. You're out of here. Remember Masada? They went and they got those guys. They were one of the last holdouts trying to fight Rome. And then from 70 AD until 1948, the region of Judea was barren and fruitless and not developed. When Israel went back, they planted trees and they drained some swamps. And you go there, it's like a paradise. There's flowers and it's beautiful. And Mount Carmel that I just pointed out there on the map, they cut down all the trees. And so when Israel came into the land, they replanted. They had a whole thing of replanting. And if you drive there now, it's just full of trees. They've replanted so many. So that's the past. Now what we're expecting for the future is we're expecting a seven-year tribulation period. That's that last week that's prophesied in Daniel where God is focused on Israel. And we have the Antichrist coming. We have destruction. We have the Battle of Armageddon. Things get burned up and wiped out. And then after that seven-year tribulation period, we have the thousand-year reign of Christ. And that's where the world gets, we have new plants, and it's getting back to be like the garden. Just beautiful, living under Jesus Christ for 1,000 years. So that's what's to come. We're going to look at all of that as we go through these next two chapters. So, chapter 34, verse 1, come near and hear and take heed. And he's going to talk about that seven-year tribulation period that we're expecting actually very soon. For the indignation of the Lord is against all nations. When we see that word indignation, that's a term for God's judgment or that 7-year tribulation period. For the indignation of the Lord is against all nations and his fury against all their armies. He has utterly destroyed them. He has given them over to the slaughter. Also their slain shall be thrown out, meaning you're not buried, you're just thrown out on the ground. Their stench shall rise from their corpses, and the mountains shall be melted with their blood. The word melted is like if you have a river that's flowing and it sort of washes the mountain away. So the mountains shall be melted, you got the flowing blood. Now, in the Jezreel Valley, which I pointed out here, let me show you again, right here is the Jezreel Valley, and right at that little spot there is a city called Megiddo. And so there's going to be a battle in the Jezreel Valley that they're going to call the Battle of Armageddon or Armageddon. And what's going to happen in that valley that we've read, you guys that have read the book of Revelation? How much blood is there going to be? Horse's bridle. The bridle's on the head. So the blood's going to be up to the bridle, up to the horse's head. It's going to be a river of blood up to the horse's head for about 180 miles. That's how terrible this battle is going to be. That's how huge this slaughter is going to be. I thought 180 miles, well, the Jezreel Valley's not that long. So I got out Google Earth and I measured it. It's about 180 miles if you go from the top of Israel up by Mount Hermon all the way down to way down by Gaza. So I don't know where that river is going to be, but it's going to be a big river of blood. That's a huge slaughter. And then verse 4. All the host of heaven shall be dissolved, and the heavens shall be rolled up like a scroll. Have you read that anywhere else in the Bible? It's in Revelation. All their hosts shall fall down, as the leaf falls from the vine, and as fruit falling from a fig tree. What does that remind you of in the book of Revelation? Remember the stars falling from heaven? In that same section, if we look at Matthew 24, Revelation chapter 6, chapter 8 through 9 and 16 through 18, and that can be your extra credit homework, it talks about the geological and these terrible things that are going to come upon the earth. All the host of heaven shall be dissolved. The heavens shall be rolled up like a scroll. All their hosts shall fall down as the leaf falls from the vine and as fruit falling from a fig tree. For my sword shall be bathed in heaven. Indeed, it shall come down on Edom. Edom was a frequent antagonist to Israel. And so I believe they're symbolic of the world that's antagonizing God's people. Indeed, it shall come down on Edom and on the people of my curse for judgment. The sword of the Lord is filled with blood. It is made overflowing with fatness, with the blood of lambs and goats, with the fat of the kidneys of rams. For the Lord has sacrificed in Bozra, which is the capital of Edom. So if we've got the capital of Edom and all these lambs and fat of kidneys and rams and goats and this fatness is there for God's sword, what's he talking about? The Israelites would take a lamb and they take it to the offering, to the altar there, and offer it to the Lord, even when they weren't in relationship with God. They did it mechanically. And they would give the offering, and God's saying, there's going to be a different offering, and it's going to be the people that have sinned. Because that lamb is receiving the judgment that the person deserved. And so now you have people that aren't bringing an offering to God, and he's coming down, and guess what, buddy? You're the offering for your own sin. These people are being judged for their own sin, and it's described in a descriptive way that the people would understand. The Lord's sword is filled with blood, and it's overflowing with fatness, like when you put the lamb on the altar. The blood of lambs and goats, fat of kidneys and rams. For the Lord has a great sacrifice going on in the capital of Edom, which is called Bozra, and a great slaughter in the land of Edom. Verse 7, the wild oxen shall come down with them, i.e. to be slain, and the young bulls with the mighty bulls to be slain. Their land shall be soaked with blood, and their dust saturated with fatness. So, 34 verse 1, come you nations and listen up. This is what's coming. All of you from all over the world, God's judgment is coming. And the people that don't belong to God are going to be slain, and it's going to be a horrible scene. Verse 8, for it is the day of the Lord's vengeance. the year of recompense for the cause of Zion. Its streams shall be turned into pitch, and its dust into brimstone. Its land shall become burning pitch. It shall not be quenched night or day. Its smoke shall ascend forever. From generation to generation it shall lie waste. No one shall pass through it forever and ever. But the pelican and the porcupine shall possess it. Also the owl and the raven shall dwell in it. And he shall stretch out over it the line of confusion and the stones of emptiness. So as we read this, what's happening to the land? It's going to lie waste. It's going to be totally burned and destroyed and lie waste. Verse 12, they shall call its nobles to the kingdom, but none shall be there. And its princes shall be nothing. And thorns shall come up in its places, nettles and brambles in its fortresses. It shall be a habitation of jackals, a courtyard for ostriches. The wild beasts of the desert shall also meet with the jackals, and the wild goats shall bleat to its companion. Also the night creature shall rest there, and find for herself a place of rest. There the arrow snake shall make her nest and lay eggs, and hatch and gather them under her shadow. There also shall be hawks gathered, every one with her mate. Verse 16, search from the book of the Lord and read. Not one of these shall fail, not one shall lack her mate, for my mouth has commanded it, and his spirit has gathered them. So in verse 16 he's saying, look at, when you see this going on, get the Bible out, because I've foretold it. Get the Bible out, it'll bear witness that not one thing I've said will fail. Verse 17, he has cast the lot for them, and his hand has divided it among them with a measuring line. They shall possess it, meaning the wild animals, they shall possess it forever from generation to generation. They shall dwell in it. So we have this period of just destruction. I confess I'm a little confused with this section, because when has this occurred? The only time I can think of where it's from generation to generation is after the Romans destroyed the region. And we have the thousands of years there. We know after the seven-year tribulation period, boom, Jesus judges the world, stops the Battle of Armageddon, and then we have the thousand-year reign starting. And it's fruitful, a blessed time. We're going to read about it here in chapter 35. So a little more study there, or just, Lord, please reveal what you intend to communicate here. But judgment, obviously, is coming in chapter 34, and God graciously gives out a call to all the nations, hey, hear and take heed. All people, hear and take heed. Even individuals, hear and take heed. This judgment is coming. And when God judges, when God exercises his vengeance, man, it's going to be something that we don't want to be part of. The wilderness and the wasteland shall be glad for them, and the desert shall rejoice and blossom as the rose. It shall blossom abundantly and rejoice, even with joy and singing. The glory of Lebanon, meaning the cedar trees that were all cut down, the glory of Lebanon shall be given to it. The excellence of Carmel and Sharon, meaning the beauty of Carmel and the fertility of Sharon, they shall see the glory of the Lord, the excellency of our God. So we have the whole region rebounding. It's going to be beautiful. Strengthen the weak hands and make firm the feeble knees. Say to those who are fearful-hearted, be strong, do not fear. Behold, your God will come with vengeance, with recompense of God. He will come and save you. Then the eyes of the blind shall be opened, and the ears of the deaf shall be unstopped. Then the lame shall leap like a deer, and the tongue of the dumb sing. So who's going to be sick and not able to walk or deaf or blind? No one. God's going to heal everybody. For the waters shall burst forth in the wilderness and streams in the desert. The parched ground shall become a pool and the thirsty land springs of water. In the habitation of jackals, where each lay, there shall be grass with reeds and rushes. Sounds great. A highway shall be there and a road, and it shall be called the highway of holiness. The unclean shall not pass over it, but it shall be for others. Whoever walks the road, although a fool, shall not go astray. Now, I love this section because we're talking about the millennial reign. We've got a new Jerusalem. We can see the measurements of it in Ezekiel. We've got a new Jerusalem. God dwells there. And everybody looks to Jerusalem during the thousand-year reign because God's there. Jesus is reigning. And there's a highway called the Highway of Holiness that goes to Jerusalem. And what I really like about it is even if the fool's walking on it, like Roger, I can't get lost. The highway's there, and I'm going to get to where God is and get to go and worship him and see him. And the land all around is going to be just sprouting forth with flora and fauna. Verse 9, no lion shall be there, nor shall any ravenous beast go up on it. So I'm walking on, Roger, who's kind of dumb, is walking on the highway of holiness. I can't get lost. There's not going to be a lion that's going to eat me or a ravenous beast. But the redeemed shall walk there. Verse 10, and the ransomed of the Lord shall return and come to Zion with singing, with everlasting joy on their heads. They shall obtain joy and gladness, and sorrow and sighing shall flee away. There we go. So we finished up as Isaiah is talking to those in Judea at the time of King Hezekiah, and he gives them a picture of the millennial reign, how beautiful it's going to be. And God's people will be there. He's promised chapter after chapter, the Assyrians aren't going to get you. Just trust in the Lord. After covering all of this, and he finishes up with a thousand-year reign, we're going to go to chapter 30.